إلا أن يشهد عرفة.
Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam stated, if a person remains unforgiven in the month of Ramadan, he will not be forgiven in any other month after it, unless he is able to attend the plains of Arafah during the obligatory pilgrimage.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's great to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we are talking about the holy month of Ramadan, this blessed opportunity to change our lives for the better, for forever. Now, one of the issues that comes up is this idea that we must refrain from sin in this holy month of Ramadan. Now, of course, if for 30 days we refrain from sinning to the best of our ability, then inshallah, by the grace and the blessings of Allah, the rest of the year we will also be able to refrain from these sins. Now, sometimes we feel like asking for forgiveness and repentance and istighfar. Yes, it is one way of erasing the sins that we have committed, or making up or compensating for the sins that we have committed. But sometimes we think, well, I want to do more. You know, I really feel bad. I really feel ashamed for what I did, for the disobedience that I committed in the presence of the Almighty Allah. I really feel like I need to do more in order to compensate and turn back these effects and this stain of a certain sin. Well, very quickly, I'm just going to tell you a few things that we can do in order to help us to truly repent and feel comfortable and really feel at ease that we have tried our best. Of course, one should never be overconfident and think, oh, God is going to forgive me for sure, no matter what, and I'm going to keep on sinning. No, this is not what is meant. What is meant is that, you know, we will try our best, and then we will put our hope and faith that Allah will forgive us, inshallah, which, you know, He will. One of the things that we can do is to have faith, strengthen our faith, to do good deeds, righteous deeds, and Allah will forgive us. Another one, of course, is to seek forgiveness for your own self and to seek forgiveness for others. Of course, you know, performing the prayers, the salah, as the Holy Quran says in chapter 11, verse number 114, and perform the prayer, surely the good deeds will drive away the evil deeds. Of course, avoiding major sins, joining a kind of struggle, a struggle for the path of Allah, the struggle for the cause of Allah, and even if you attain martyrdom in it, as the Holy Quran says in chapter 3, verse number 195, and they fought and were slain. And then it continues and says that them, I, Allah, shall surely acquit of their evil deeds. Two other things very quickly. One is paying the alms, and helping those in need and solving the problems of others. And interestingly, one last thing, in order to atone, one of the things that can be done as far as the traditions is concerned is to say salam, greetings to other people, to give food to the needy, and to conduct the night prayers while others are asleep. Beautiful things in the holy month of Ramadan that we can do to turn a new leaf over and start a new life. This is Dialogue, the holy month of Ramadan.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
And now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Haydar Jaffer.
So Maher Ramadan, do not look at it as a negative aspect. It is a positive revolution whereby in this revolution, I am the soldier, I am the commander-in-chief, I am the general, I am the ruler, and I will reap the rewards, nobody else. If we look at it in this way, then we will find that our life will change and our thought process will change. And of course, what is the point of all this? To get closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, to gain taqwa, which means being aware of Allah at all times and getting close to Him as much as possible, so that when it is time for me to go, when Malakul Maut comes, perhaps this ayat will apply to me. Ya ayyatuha nafsul mutma'inna, irji'i ila rabbiki radiyatan mardiyya. Right? O tranquil soul, return to your Lord pleased with Him, and He pleased with you. This is the ultimate success that we are looking for. This is what Maha Ramadan is all about.
Ya awwal كل شيء وآخر يا إله.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at farstoday.com/en, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Ya ilaha kull shay'in wa malika, ya rabba kull shay'in wa sani'a, ya khaliqa kull shay'in.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
In a recent report by the New York Times, Canada's main city of Toronto was described as the Wild West of marijuana shops. According to the report, Ontario's provincial government permitted the shops by emergency order to keep operating during the COVID-19 pandemic, even during lockdowns. During this period, to the investors' delight, shares in the stocks of licensed medical marijuana growers in Canada have multiplied in price. However, the marijuana business was already expected to flourish, even before the pandemic started in 2019 and right after Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, to fulfill a campaign promise, introduced legislation to legalize the recreational use of marijuana in Canada, the prospects look good. Eventually, the Government of Canada legalized cannabis for recreational use on October 17, 2018. The Cannabis Act creates a legal and regulatory framework for controlling the production, distribution, sale, and possession of cannabis in Canada. Canada is now the second nation after Uruguay to completely legalize marijuana as a consumer product, in an effort to extinguish the criminal trade and keep the substance out of the hands of youth by regulating the market. However, growing, importing, exporting, or selling marijuana, particularly to minors, outside licensed channels, remain a serious crime. Meanwhile, critics of the cannabis law highlight the damaging impact to society of the widespread use of the drugs. When the use of cannabis becomes more widespread, the drug can also have downsides, including acute injuries and illnesses. In some cases, marijuana could lead to cyclical vomiting syndrome, a condition characterized by vomiting and severe abdominal pain. And also, those who use cannabis are more prone to mental illnesses. While many shops remain closed in Toronto, following several rounds of lockdowns and many office towers in the city remain mostly empty, the marijuana shops apparently have a booming business. They were permitted by the provincial government's emergency order to keep operating during the pandemic. In March 2020, during the early months of the pandemic, there were only 12 cannabis shops, but now there are 430 shops with another 88 in the approval process. When Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's government legalized marijuana in 2018, its primary goal was to create a more equitable justice system by putting an end to heavily racialized arrests, possession, not a major new business sector. According to a recent government-sponsored report, in only 3 years, sales of legal marijuana in Ontario have outpaced estimates of unlicensed sales and boosted the economy by $10.6 billion. Polls indicate that more Canadians consume it than they did before, 25% of people 16 and up. Violence at the Al-Aqsa compound has surged during the fasting month of Ramadan. It all began when dozens of Israeli military forces stormed into the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied Old City of Al-Quds and restricted the entry of Palestinian worshippers into the Flashpoint holy site to secure the incursion of hundreds of extremist settlers to mark the Passover holiday. Regime forces assaulted Muslim worshippers inside prayer halls while protecting the Israeli settlers desecrating Islam's third holiest site. So far, at least 19 Palestinians have been killed, while hundreds more have been injured in clashes with Israeli forces. This has raised concerns about a slide back into the wider Israeli-Palestinian conflict, like the one in May last year when frequent acts of violence against Palestinian worshippers at Al-Aqsa Mosque led to an 11-day war between Palestinian resistance groups in the besieged Gaza Strip and the Israeli regime. But why is the Al-Aqsa compound a central point of contention in the issue of Palestine? Israel-occupied East Al-Quds, where Al-Aqsa is located, during the 1967 Arab-Israeli War. It annexed the entire city in 1980 in a move never recognized by the international community. The illegal Israeli control of East Al-Quds, including the Old City, violates several principles of international law, which outlines that an occupying power does not have sovereignty in the territory it occupies. Following Israel's occupation of East Al-Quds, a delegated status quo was agreed upon, with Jordan giving Muslims the sole right to pray at Al-Aqsa and Jews at the nearby Western Wall. However, Palestinians accuse Israel of restricting Muslim worship at Al-Aqsa while not doing enough to enforce the ban on Jewish prayer at the compound and even protecting the violators. The ensuing Israeli aggression against Palestinians at the Al-Aqsa compound is a flagrant violation of the status quo. Next, what has the international community done to put an end to Israeli violence against Palestinians? Well, the regime in Tel Aviv continues its crimes with total impunity, and the international community is silent, except for a few words of caution. The United Nations believes it suffices to express deep concern over the worsening security situation in the occupied Palestinian territories, saying it will probe into the use of force at Al-Aqsa. But is that enough? Perhaps the world's largest and most familiar international organization is too busy, preoccupied, or distracted with the Russia-Ukraine war, but the issue of Palestine deserves the same, if not more, attention since it has been ongoing for several decades. Thousands of people across the globe have taken to the streets to deplore Israeli violence against Palestinians at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound and elsewhere in the occupied territories, as the regime in Tel Aviv continues its crimes in Palestine. In Pakistan, thousands of people took part in rallies after Friday prayers in major cities, denouncing the Israeli attacks on Palestinian worshippers in Al-Aqsa Mosque as naked terrorism and urging Islamic countries to intervene immediately to protect the sacred site and Palestinian lives. Also in Bangladesh, thousands of people demonstrated against the Israeli onslaught. Elsewhere in Jordan, the protesters called for the expulsion of the Israeli ambassador and Amman's withdrawal from the Jordan-Israeli peace treaty signed in 1994. Pro-Palestinian rallies, however, have not been limited to Muslim-majority countries. Rallies were held in the US as well as European capitals such as Amsterdam, London, and Berlin. The protesters called for international action, including sanctions to end the Israeli occupation of Palestinian territories and the regime's growing aggression.
And so we're on a continuous upward trend, a continuous upward surge in support for Palestine and support for the boycott and isolation of the Israeli occupation and in standing with the Palestinian resistance.
More protests have been organized in other countries worldwide. One of the many online websites promoting resistance against Israel is Samidun, Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network, which has urged all Palestinian, Arab, and international supporters of Palestine to organize events and confront Israeli massacres and ethnic cleansing, events which are held by different organizations around the world.
Israeli military forces have raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied old city of Al-Quds as worshippers gathered for dawn prayers, with medics reporting that more than 40 Palestinians were injured as a result of the raid. Local sources said some worshippers were trapped inside the mosque amid clouds of tear gas, with the regime troops throwing stun grenades at them. According to the Palestinian media, at least 43 Palestinians were injured in the raid. The development comes a day after as many as 30 Palestinians were wounded after Israeli forces continued their violent attacks against worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied Al-Quds. The troops used rubber bullets, tear gas canisters, stun grenades, and pepper spray against the worshippers, who have been braving increasing aggression ordered by the Israeli regime since the beginning of the holy fasting month of Ramadan.
Right now, the site of the mosque is sacred to three major religions, but the Israelis have no consideration for anyone but themselves and their own wants and desires. So right now, when they are entering the mosque, the sacred mosque, attacking people while they're praying, worshippers are there for dawn prayers, and the IDF soldiers and the settlers are simply invading the mosque, firing tear gas, rubber bullets, and live rounds of ammunition sometimes, all to terrorize and drive them away because they want the site completely for themselves.
The series of raids on the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, one of the holiest sites in Islam, began last Saturday when the Israeli troops injured more than 150 Palestinians there. Israel's new campaign against the Palestinians doesn't stop at the occupied West Bank. On Thursday, the Israeli army carried out airstrikes across the Gaza Strip, targeting positions belonging to the resistance groups. Similar developments last year led to an 11-day war between Israel and Gaza-based resistance groups. The conflict killed over 260 Palestinians, including scores of women and children. The Arab League broke its silence on the Israeli raids on Al-Aqsa, calling on the regime to prevent Israelis from entering the compound. In an emergency meeting in the Jordanian capital, Amman, the organization warned that Israel's actions threaten to ignite a cycle of violence, and the attacks and violations represent a blatant provocation to the feelings of Muslims. But how will such declarations help defuse the situation when, ironically, countries that have recently normalized their ties with Israel, including the United Arab Emirates and Morocco, were in attendance at the meeting? People took to the streets of the Jordanian capital, Amman, in solidarity with the Palestinians on Friday, calling on the government to expel the Israeli ambassador and scrap a peace treaty signed with the regime. Such protests have been held in several different countries, but without a unified international response to Israel, the protests are unlikely to be enough to put an end to such violations.
the international community, as you mentioned, is not doing anything about this. It's so hypocritical to see the international community condemn the things that the Russians are doing to the Ukrainians when the Israelis are doing the exact same things to the Palestinians, and that and their crimes are supported by the United States and other nations.
In the absence of any practical measure taken against the regime, resistance seems to be the only option.
Russian President Vladimir Putin announced on Thursday that Russian forces have won the battle for the strategic southern city of Mariupol. Russian forces appear to be in control of the city, including its important but now seriously damaged port. At a joint appearance with his defense minister Sergei Shoigu, Putin declared that, quote, the completion of combat work to liberate Mariupol is a success. The Russian president offered congratulations to Shoigu and Russian forces. But what is the strategic significance of the latest developments of the war? Mariupol is a major port in Ukraine's eastern Donbass region. It is situated between areas held by pro-Russian forces in Ukraine and Crimea, the Black Sea Peninsula that came under Russian control in 2014. Taking the city now will allow Russia to connect the two areas as it steps up its military campaign in Ukraine's east. Moscow can now secure more of the southern coastline, complete a land bridge between Russian soil and the Crimean Peninsula, and free up more troops to join the battle for Donbass, which is Ukraine's eastern industrial heartland. Despite Russia's announcement of victory in Mariupol, hundreds of Ukrainian troops and civilians are still holding out inside a giant steel factory in the city. Russian forces have tried for weeks to dislodge them, but to no avail. The Kremlin says there is no need for Russian troops to enter the complex passageways of the sprawling Azovstal steelworks. The Russian president ordered his forces to block off the industrial area so that, quote, not even a fly can get through. Ukraine and its Western allies have disputed Russia's claim of complete victory in the city. But Moscow seems to be already looking beyond the southern city. Russian officials say the war's main objective is now capturing the mostly Russian-speaking Donbass region. Last month, Russian forces were driven away from the capital Kiev and northern Ukraine. Things will definitely not be smooth in the east either, as Western nations rush to funnel heavy arms into Ukraine to help it counter the offensive.
The Ukrainian armed forces were trained by NATO, equipped by NATO, and trained to the standards of NATO. So that is a major factor as to why the Ukrainian armed forces have put up stiff resistance to the Russian army.
U.S. President Joe Biden has announced another $800 million to help Ukrainian forces fight in the east. He said this week that Washington and its allies are moving as fast as possible to provide Kiev with the weapons that it needs. According to Biden, the U.S. and its allies are facing a critical window of time where they are going to set the stage for the next phase of this war. Much is at stake in Ukraine for major world powers. The war has been widely described as an escalation of the never-ending tug of war between the West and the Russian Federation. The outcome of the conflict could have far-reaching consequences and may shift the balance of power in the region and beyond.
Iranian Radio Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
تمام ارزش ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام میگذاره همه این ارزش ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali عليه الصلاة والسلام, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
Universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام كل معاجل يسأل الإنذار وكل مؤجل يتعلل بالتسويف.
Imam Ali said, "He whom death overtakes early seeks time, while he whose death is deferred puts forth excuses for the postponement of doing good actions." Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio. The program is To My Brother, and we are discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. In this era of social media and in this era of communication without limits and without bounds, we interestingly find ourselves searching for friends. Well, in a certain day and age, we used to call them friends. Now, all of a sudden, we call them followers, which is a different, it's a step down from friendship. But anyways, it seems that in everybody's life, there comes an age where friendship is a big part of one's life. having friends, losing friends, socializing with people is something that is natural for a human being. When it comes to the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam, we find that His Eminence, the first divinely appointed Imam, the living miracle of the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, we find that he talks about friends. In one of his statements, he says that abandoning friends and not socializing with people is a strong motivation for cutting off of friendships. And so we find that Imam Ali alayhi salam further says, it is easy to find friends, but it is difficult to keep them. Now, of course, we need to keep in mind here that when Imam Ali alayhi salam talks about it is easy to find friends, of course, he's talking about good friends. He's talking about noble friends. He is talking about friends who help us to walk upon the path of Allah. He is talking about friends who help us to obey Allah. And of course, he is talking about friends who help us to refrain from disobeying Allah. And they help us to refrain from committing sins. Of course, the best kind of friend is a friend who helps us to be a better human being, helps us to be a better Muslim. Now, if we don't, keep in touch with these friends of ours, these good friends, noble friends, righteous friends, if we don't keep in contact with them, then the friendship starts to deteriorate, and eventually the friendship turns into an acquaintance, and an acquaintance into a stranger. And of course, we will find that, you know, eventually you lose that friend. A friend that was very helpful to us to be on the path of pure Muhammadan Islam. And so it takes a little bit of effort for us to keep these good friends. We have to be patient with them. We have to overlook their faults and their mistakes. We have to try to help them when they are in a difficult situation. And so truly, it is easy to find friends, but it is difficult to keep them. And of course, we see this fact in the life of Imam Ali alayhi salam, where people claimed to be his friend and claimed to be his followers and claimed to be his supporters, but towards the end of their own lives, they turned back on what they said. A beautiful, profound, and thought-provoking lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم إني أسألك الأمان يوم لا ينفع مال ولا بنون إلا من أتى الله بقلب سليم.
O Allah, I ask you for the protection of the day when property will not avail, nor sons except he who comes with a heart free from evil.
وأسألك الأمان يوم يعض الظالم على يدي يقول يا ليتني اتخذت مع الرسول سبيلا.
And I ask you for protection on the day when the unjust one will bite his hands, saying, "Oh, would that I had taken away with the messenger."
تمام ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به اسلام، چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به هر دینی.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib. This means Ali ibn Abi Talib is a global character who is respected by Sunnis, Shias, and even non-Muslims. Everyone, even the faithless people, respect Imam Ali and his personal values.
وقتی شخصیت امیرالمومنین رو بشناسی در مقابل او خضوع میکند.
کل صبح و کل اشراقیان تبق عینی به دمع مشتاقیان قد لسعت حیت الهوا کبدی فلا تبي ولها ولا راغي
Now let's listen to Brother Muhammad Al-Hilli, who's going to talk about today's topic.
His name brings about a sense of strength in the heart. His remembrance is a source of inspiration for the souls. His legacy is widespread throughout the centuries and around the world. It is difficult not to stand in admiration and not to be proud to be of the followers of the brother of the Holy Prophet and the greatest human being after the Prophet, Amir al-Mu'mineen wa Imam al-Muttaqeen, Ali ibn Abi Talib, salawatullahi wa salamu alayhi. This magnificent human being epitomized the very qualities of a perfect individual sent by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for the guidance and for the well-being of all mankind. The love of Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam is one that exists deeply and is found within our hearts and within our setup. It is not possible to find amongst the different communities around the world, a group of people who will not love this individual, who have not learned to understand his excellence and his brilliance. In fact, from a young childhood, you and I have been raised with the love of this honorable individual, and we have become more and more attached to his personality. The more we understand about his life, the more we appreciate his teachings, the more we recognize the importance of what he set out to achieve. That's why the famous Arab poet says, as far as our children, as far as our upbringing, as far as how we were inculcated with the love of Amir al-Mu'mineen, he famously says, لا عذب الله أمي إنها شربت حب الوصي وَغَذَّتْنِيهِ فِي اللَّبَنِي. He says, may Allah never punish my mother because she drank the love of Ali and she fed it to me through the milk. وَكَانَ لِي وَالِدٌ يَهْوَى أَبَا حَسَنٍ فَصَرْتُ مِنْ ذِي وَذَا أَهْوَى أَبَا حَسَنِي. I have a father who loves Abul Hasan Ali, and that's why, as a result of my father and my mother, I was brought up in the love and the admiration of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
Listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
in the limelight.
An analysis released recently shows that the CEOs of some of the largest corporations in the United States made 254 times more than their median employees in 2021, as executive bonuses and stock awards grew significantly. Please stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Jake Johnson, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Analysis Shows Top U.S. CEOs Made 254 Times More Than Median Workers in 2021. Here's the story. An analysis released recently shows that the CEOs of some of the largest corporations in the United States made 254 times more than their median employees in 2021, as executive bonuses and stock awards grew significantly. According to the latest edition of the Ecolar 100, an annual report that spotlights executive pay at leading U.S. companies, median total CEO compensation at top firms soared to $20 million in 2021, a nearly 31% increase from 2020. Increases were seen across all pay components, notes the new analysis, which lists the total compensation and CEO to median employee pay ratio of the 100 largest U.S. companies by revenue, a ranking that includes Apple, Microsoft, Raytheon, and Intel. While median salary and median perks increased incrementally, the largest jumps were examined in the form of cash bonuses and stock awards. The analysis notes the median value of stock awards increased by 22.7% in 2021, from $8.6 million to $10.5 million. Meanwhile, cash bonuses increased by 46.4% in 2021, from $2.8 million to $4.2 million. Intel CEO Pat Gelsinger topped the Ecolar 100 list with $177.9 million in total compensation in 2021, followed by Apple CEO Tim Cook, who took home $98.7 million last year, a 569% increase from 2020. Amid record-shattering corporate profits and surging CEO pay, typical workers continued to struggle in 2021 as the coronavirus kept spreading and rising prices of food, housing, and other necessities eroded their modest wage gains. As Bloomberg reported last month, employee compensation rose 11% in 2021, but the so-called labor share of national income, essentially the portion that's paid out as wages and salaries, fell back to pre-pandemic levels. Sarah Anderson, director of the Global Economy Project at the Institute for Policy Studies, told CNBC recently that the new Ecolar study shows corporations really just let loose in 2021 and were focused on keeping their executives happy and not worrying as much about what was happening on the worker end. Anderson said workers, many of whom are on the front lines of the crisis, have not been reaping the rewards. Ecolar's findings provide further evidence that the decades-long trend of soaring CEO compensation and largely stagnant worker pay is persisting as legislative efforts to narrow the gap go nowhere. According to the Economic Policy Institute, EPI, CEO pay in the U.S. rose 1,322% between 1978 and 2020, while typical worker pay grew just 18%. Recently, EPI and Harvard University's Shift Project released a company wage tracker that uses survey data to show employee wage distributions at nearly 70 large retail and food service companies, including Dollar General, Walmart, McDonald's, and other prominent corporations. At a Starbucks, where workers have sparked a union organizing wave in recent months, 63% of workers mark below $15 an hour. EPI notes, at Dollar General and McDonald's, 92% and 89% of workers respectively make below $15 an hour. With nearly one in four workers making below $10 an hour at both companies, a majority, about 51% of workers, made below $15 an hour at Walmart. Ben Zipperer, an economist at EPI, said in a statement that low wages are a defining feature of the U.S. labor market, and the service sector in particular. Zipperer added, low pay is not limited to mom-and-pop stores. It is also widespread in big-box stores, restaurants, and grocery stores that often have high CEO pay and revenue. A higher minimum wage and unions can put corporate greed in check and raise wages throughout the labor market.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, 14 unrecommended actions for a faster. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. Brothers and sisters, we know that while we're fasting, and let's talk about the jurisprudential fasting, the very bare bones, basic level, you know, beginner's level fasting. There are some do's and there are some don'ts, and there are rulings about it that we all are expected to know. Now, I wanted to today list some unrecommended actions, you know, other than those rulings of do's and don'ts, you know, the wajibs and harams, you know, things that validate or invalidate a fast. We're not talking about that. We're talking about some unrecommended actions, which we have been reminded of by Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam not to perform while we're fasting. Number one is dispute, argue and swear. Now, we know that, you know, sometimes we're not in the best of the moods, especially if we're hungry and thirsty, right? So it's easy or comparatively easier to get into disputes. Well, avoid that. Two is reading poems except for Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam. Three is kissing, touching, and foreplay with one's spouse. Now, it may not be haram, you know, we're not going in that direction. And for that, you have to look at the jurisprudential rulings. We're just saying that don't open up that door. Number four is brushing teeth without a wet toothbrush. Number five is using eye makeup or eye drops. You know, it's not recommended. Unless, of course, you know, there's a medical condition. Number six, rinse out the mouth, you know. Don't just do it, you know, periodically, except for wudu, of course. That's where you have to do as a mustahab act. But other than that, you know, try to avoid such a situation. Number seven is giving blood or anything which makes the faster weak. Now, again, the exceptions are there. You know, if somebody's dying, of course, save them. But generally speaking, you know, these are the unrecommended acts that we would like to remind you and ourselves of. Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing the 17 unrecommended actions for a faster. And this is different from what you may find in the do's and don'ts of the fasting. Number 8 is inhaling where one does not know if it reaches the throat. You know, again, avoid such a situation, inhaling anything of some sort. Number 9 is smelling of flowers, especially narcissus. You know, this, yes, you can smell, you know, it's you would like to smell a nice flower, but while you're fasting, try to avoid such a situation. Number 10 is enema with solid. Number 11 is making your clothes wet. Number 12 is sitting in the water for women. Number 13 is having a full stomach for those excused from fasting. You know, sometimes because of valid reasons, Islamic jurisprudence allows you not to fast, but then in that state, while you're not fasting, you should still respect the month of Ramadan. Fine, you had a valid excuse, but don't just roam around and eat in front of other people or, you know, eating full, you know, stomach full. These are some things which should be avoided. Last but not the least is troubling your worker or family. I think this is probably one of the most frequent scenes that we get to see during the holy month of Ramadan, because the routines have changed, because, you know, we're thirsty, we're hungry, we're lethargic, we're tired, you know, in some cases we just want to go and sleep and doze off, but, you know, we're at work. So this is where you have to be careful, right? Be extra careful not to trouble your worker or another family member or a friend. These are some of the unrecommended actions that we wanted to remind ourselves and you of. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Human values are alien to the Zionist regime. Imam Khomeini. Everybody together, unanimously, with one voice, present at the glorious demonstration of God's Day.
In the limelight.
More than 5 dozen advocacy groups have pressured Congress to cut off U.S. military support for the Saudi-led war and blockade on Yemen, highlighting that it has helped cause the deaths of nearly 500,000 people and pushed millions more to the edge of starvation. Stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Jessica Corbett, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Coalition Demands End to U.S. Military Support for Saudi-led War on Yemen. Here's the story. More than 5 dozen advocacy groups have recently pressured Congress to cut off U.S. military support for the Saudi-led war and blockade on Yemen, highlighting that it has helped cause the death of nearly 500,000 people and pushed millions more to the edge of starvation. The group's letter to Congress, led by Churches for Middle East Peace, Demand Progress, Friends Committee on National Legislation, FCNL, Move On, Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, and Yemen Relief and Reconstruction Foundation comes in the midst of a 2-month truce. The signatories are calling on lawmakers to co-sponsor a forthcoming war powers resolution from Representatives Pramila Jayapal and Peter DeFazio, declaring that Congress must reassert its Article 1 war powers, terminate U.S. involvement in Saudi Arabia's war and blockade, and do everything it can to support the Yemen truce. Hassan Attayeb, Legislative Director for Middle East Policy at FCNL, said in a statement recently that the recently announced nationwide truce between Yemen's warring parties offers hope that an end to the 7-year conflict might finally be possible. Congress must help prevent backsliding by Saudi Arabia, which has driven so much of the violence through indiscriminate airstrikes and crippling blockade, by passing the Yemen War Powers Resolution and blocking U.S. military support for any renewed hostilities, he added. Congressional pressure is critical right now to keep the warring parties at the bargaining table and off the battlefield. A coalition led by Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates began waging war on Yemen when then-U.S. President Barack Obama was in office, and continued to do so throughout the former President Donald Trump's tenure. When President Joe Biden took office, he committed to ending U.S. support for the Saudi-UAE-led coalition's brutal war on Yemen, noted Demand Progress foreign policy campaigner Kavan Kazagurian. Unfortunately, the U.S. continues to provide critical support for the coalition's war effort and blockade, which has led to one of the world's worst humanitarian crises, he added. As the letter lays out, in February 2021, Biden announced an end to U.S. participation in the Saudi-led coalition's offensive operations in Yemen. Yet the United States continues to provide spare parts, maintenance, and logistical support for Saudi warplanes. The administration also never defined what offensive and defensive support constituted, and it has since approved over $1 billion in arms sales, including new attack helicopters and air-to-air missiles. This support sends a message of impunity to the Saudi-led coalition for its bombardment and siege of Yemen. With continued U.S. military support, Saudi Arabia escalated its campaign of collective punishment on the people of Yemen in recent months, making the start of 2022 one of the deadliest time periods of the war, the letter points out, adding, earlier this year, Saudi airstrikes targeting a migrant detention facility and vital communications infrastructure killed at least 90 civilians, wounded over 200, and triggered a nationwide internet blackout.